Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on such a beautiful sunny day. It is 9 a.m. on July 19th, 2022, and time to convene the regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Commission. I'm Toni Olson, Board President. To my right, we have Board Vice President Rebecca Wolf. To my left, we have Board Secretary Sid Logan. John Harlow, CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please remember to mute or turn off your cell or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and the CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. John, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
We have a lot of good stuff, exciting stuff to go through this morning, so we'll get right to it. First up is an update on our community engagement from Kelly Strand. Good morning, Kelly.
Hi there, can you hear me well? I don't come to you with another microphone. Thank you. So Allison, I should probably start. I'm Kelly Strand. I'm in Energy Services as a Senior Program Manager. Here to give you an update on Flex Energy pilot programs. Allison has just figured out how to put our presentation up on the board, which we don't usually do for the community update, so that will save me from being Vanna White for the rest of you, but I have a few copies of the really beautiful 17 by 11 version of this, which we're actually going to be sharing with our customers as of tomorrow and again in the fall.
Commissioners, would you like to have a copy of that as well?
I would.
Yes.
Thank you. Great. So we can talk all day about Flex Energy. Unfortunately, we don't have it, so I'm going to do the fast version. as a reminder, I came to you probably around this time, maybe a little earlier last year, and we talked about the Flex Energy proposal of a pilot, and at that time I talked to you about the goals. There were three goals. There were a customer experience goal, a team PUD goal, and a delivering now and for the future goal. And so we have since moved into the pilot phase where we offered enrollment to our customers very broadly. Within the pilot, we offered three different areas for participation. One was Flex Time program, or a time of day program. One was Flex Peak, or a critical peak pricing program. And the third was our demand response, or Flex Response program. Within those, we also offered customers to enroll devices, OEM devices, to help them save or shift energy. Those include Nest and Ecobee thermostats, and ChargePoint and Enelix or Juicebox chargers. And then customers can also participate without any devices. We call that behavioral participation as well. So year one began on October 1st of 2021, and it just ended on 6/30/2022. And this that you're looking at here is the year one major summary. So I'd like to run through it. Would you show me the first? Perfect. Thank you. Excellent. So this is a recap of participation. What you can see on the left-hand side is across all of those three pilot groups, we had just a little over 50% of our pilot, which as of the time that we printed this in May, we had about 546 customers. So just over half of that were participating in our Flex Time program. On the right-hand side, you also see the participation by device, and just a little over, oh, over that amount at 60%, we're actually participating without any technology. That's a behavioral path, and we've called that customer choice. And then you could see that from there, the OEM device is divided into smaller and smaller subsets. Thank you. Okay. Our first winter, which at the top it states it ran from November through February, we engaged a number of peak events. Those are called events that went to our Flex Response and Flex Peak customers. And we called 14 out of the 15 potential events that we could call. Those were divided up between November and February, 2 in November, and then in the really cold months, 5 in December, 4 in January, and 3 in February. By weekday, we spread them out by day so that we would get information. Remember, this pilot only runs through Friday. It's a resource that we can call on those days, and it avoids major holidays. By duration, we also have a split out by duration. We just had 1 2-hour event, but what we're looking for here is more on the 3 and 4-hour events. That's much more heavily weighted. We also divided the morning and evening events, and they're relatively evenly split. 8 in the morning, 6 in the evening. Similarly, just a tad, thank you. We also have a breakdown of the flex time or time of day program. That program has 3 rates. The peak rate, which you see in the top corner, is about 504 hours of peak rate time. The remainder is either at a standard hour level, or nights and weekends provide a discount to those customers. And that's about 3 times as much as our peak hours. That's the overview. Thank you. What we achieved, the savings and shifting that we achieved during the times when peak events were called on the peak, Flex Peak program was remarkable at 29%. That's really amazing. We were very proud of that. And in the Flex Response program, 11%. Also a fantastic result. The Flex Time program, where the math is actually done across every one of those peak hours, 6 each day, 3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon, a 12% shift or reduction. So it's a great result, especially for our first year. We anticipate growth and improvement in that the next year. That's our hope as customers get familiar with the behaviors that they take to lower their usage at a certain time when we ask. Do you have a question?
Were you surprised at the response? I was sort of surprised that the Flex Peak did so well. I sort of the carrot and the stick, and that's it.
Well, when the stick comes with a price disparity at such a great amount, that part, the difference between Flex Peak and Flex Response, which are similar other than the price difference, the fact that Flex Peak won essentially didn't surprise me. But you know what? We're playing in a green field here. Yeah. The PUD has never passed on this type of program that engages our customers in quite this way. So to be very honest, Commissioner, I didn't know what to expect, but I was extremely pleased. This is a great result.
29% is dramatic.
At 11%. I bet you that if I were to go to power supply and promise them 11% on peak during the winter time, they'd like me a lot. That's exactly right.
Kelly, how does this compare to other PUDs, if you know?
You know, we've compared ourselves to a broad set of demand response and time dynamic rate programs, and this really falls somewhere in the middle. Now, that's comparing across all types of programs, including winter and summertime programs that have AC load. So this falls in the middle. It tells me that there is opportunity in the future, but also that this is a really impressive place to start, I think.
That was a question that I was going to raise, but going beyond the borders of Washington State, aren't there some utilities like in California that have a pretty mature program?
Yes, absolutely. Some of the differences between what we have done and what they have done is that we actually recruited customers to bring their own devices. A lot of those programs that have 100,000 Nest devices included, they have given those devices away for free as an enrollment perk, and then they enroll them directly in a demand response or a time of day critical inferencing program. So there are some fundamental differences. It really helps to recruit customers when you give away a device. So that's one thing to consider. But yes, and that result where we are somewhere in the middle of the pack, that's a national statistic we're comparing ourselves against. Yep, good questions. Thank you. So what does that mean to our customers? We ballpark, we save 43 megawatt hours of energy in that short period of time. That translates roughly to about 4 homes powered for an entire year. It's the amount of energy roughly that 6 residential solar arrays would produce from the arrays in our service territory. It's also enough power to drive 145,000 miles in an electric vehicle, which is an exciting thing to share. Mental math says pre-pandemic, I drive about 12,000 miles a year. That's 12 vehicles, which is pretty exciting. Sliding down, we look at the avoided costs section. So this entire page is really interesting to me and certainly interesting to our teams here at the PUD too. So avoided costs are essentially what we didn't have to spend as a result of calling demand response events or having higher peak periods for time of day. We have a couple of statistics for you. During peak events, market power purchases were typically 54% higher than other hours during the year, which is remarkable, and it helps us set the scene for cost savings. And then during the market high, when we called an event on December 20th, power prices were $126 per megawatt hour, significantly higher, 312% higher than what the average was for the same period of time. Go down, that's further explained. So we're working with a body of 546, small but nimble customer group, right? Those customers, that 43 megawatt hours of savings represents almost $7,900 that we would not have had to purchase from a natural gas generator. That's simply the least cost resource that we are using as an example. No plans to build a natural gas generator, of course.
If you don't know that.
You bet. And that is at the bottom of the sheet in clear lettering. And on the right-hand side, you see that the comparison for a utility battery storage or a portion of a larger utility battery looks like about double that amount at $14,000. Now, this is 546 customers. What does this mean? If we do recruit more customers, there are a number of things that we could do. Some of them would include giving away thermostats, etc., and some of them do not. So at the bottom of the sheet, we see the scaled up version of that. If we had 10,000 customers that emulated the same behaviors as these 546, it actually means that if we were to avoid a natural gas generator, that would be $104,000. In utility battery storage, again, almost double that at $260,000. If instead we were to capture almost a third of our residential market at $100,000, we'd add a zero to that, $1.4 million or $2.6 million in avoided costs. So this, again, small but nimble group gives us a great vision into what resources we may have available to us in the future.
Do you have any idea how much avoided carbon not having a purchase on the market?
It's a great question. We have done some analysis on that, but it's really, really hard to attribute the carbon on the open market to our usage here in Snohomish County. So what we have been able to do is identify that there was generally more carbon-laden, more fossil fuels being used in the energy mix on the days that we have made calls.
Right.
That alignment we have done, but the specific attribution is very challenging. Yeah. And then the last page is customer feedback. Again, one of our main goals is a customer experience goal here, so we're trying to capture feedback in quite a number of ways. So customers' top reasons for participating really look like saving money and saving energy, but we were also remarkably impressed by the quantity of customers who wanted to support the community, support the PUD, support the grid, and alleviate some of the impacts there. So that was really nice to see. And our top reasons for customers leaving, where they actually moved residences. And sadly, we have installed special, we've installed interval meters on our customers' homes, and following them and moving the meter and trying to collect the data and align it is a reasonable challenge. So we haven't been able to continue with them after they move residences. A number have, of course, preferred either the BPP or standard PUD rates. They didn't care for the peakiness or the events that we have sent their way. And we have celebrated, I have followed up with an email with every single customer who has moved into, has installed solar. So that's another reason. And in the future, again, we would be able to, or we will be able to include solar customers. So those are a number of things that are really resolvable, to be honest, that we see going forward. One more statistic that I will leave you with, it's not on our sheet, but we were really excited about, was that we've done a customer survey in the springtime, and one question that we asked our customers in the Plus Energy group was whether or not they would recommend the program to friend, neighbor, family member. And for the flex time group, the average response was an 8.2 yes out of 10. Flex peak was 7.3 out of 10. And flex response was even higher at a 9.2 out of 10.
So what was the last one?
9.2 out of 10 on average. So we're really pleased to learn that the programs had such a positive response. That's the update that I have for you. This is the document that will be going again to our customers in an email tomorrow, and then we'll be following up with them in the springtime. It'll also be posted to our website.
So with 360,000 electricity customers, what could we possibly do to get considerably more people? I was going to do flex energy.
Yes.
Or flex peak. No. What is not flex? Flex peak.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't pay attention to the deadline and I missed it, so I couldn't sign up.
I'm sorry.
So I'm eager to do that.
I think in the future, so I think about a couple of questions there. In the future, there are a number of different programmatic approaches that we could take to enrolling customers. One thing is that with a pilot, we had a relatively limited period of time within which we could pull customers in. And sadly, we bumped into that. So one will be simply elongating the enrollment period for our customers. As customers become more aware, as customers get more and more opportunity and support from their neighbors or perhaps folks who have participated, we'll get the word out better and better. So that's one thing. And looking forward to the future, we're hoping to have more and more programs available to our customers in the coming years. AI, our Connected program, will certainly support the vast majority of those.
We still down the road as this matures, we'll consider what others have done in terms of providing the units.
Yes, yeah, we will look at a variety of different programmatic offerings. I'm also connected very closely with the other public utilities in our state. I frequently communicate with them and we share lessons learned back and forth, so that's a great opportunity for us to benefit from the lessons learned of others as well.
But you also communicate with other utilities around the country.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Have a great month.
John, did you have a comment?
Oh, yeah, just thank you, Kelly. Excellent information. And it really is exciting to see what where this pilot will go in the future. Next up, we have provided a legislative update in the packet, and we have Kim Johnston here. Do we have any questions?
I have none either.
You know, I guess kind of a general question since you're here. The EPA, the Supreme Court ruling about the EPA, has that been affect CETA at all?
I would say today, I don't anticipate that it will impact CETA, but there will be a cascade of impacts that remain to be seen as states kind of grapple with the Supreme Court ruling and beef up their own Washington State, I included in the report, there was a press conference that Governor Inslee did. He clearly had some strong reactions to the Supreme Court ruling. So less CETA, as we see that rulemaking is included there, but future programs and policy making potentially. Less so in Washington State,
okay,
more so across the country.
So it's really the state by state thing now.
Okay, and we have one other item to cover in our updates, and that is the update on our bond sale. And Jim Crumling is in that. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, John. So before I jump into the letting you know about the bond sale, I just want to have a shout out and some major kudos for the team that put this all together. And I want to start with Lauren Way, who's sitting back here, and Alexis Dickey in the Treasury Department. They do all the heavy lifting, and they go round up all the information we need. Ann Spangler and her team are an integral part of this, and really provide a lot of support. And then Garrison Warner and Brian Booth are also really instrumental in pulling together the power resource section and a lot of information that's contained in this nifty little offering document that is quite complete. In fact, Commissioner Wolf, I think you were referring to this last.
What I got was spelled that C.
Well, it, depending on.
2019. I'm wondering. 2019. Of course, I read every word of it.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It is really a terrific document, and there is a lot of great information in it, but it is also very difficult to pull together. So kudos to all those folks that helped on that. So just kind of starting off, last Tuesday we went out to the market and we had a really successful bond sale. Sold $61 million in bonds that mature over the next 30 years. We were able to obtain a rate of 3.96, which was under 4, which I was very pleased about, given where the market's been and kind of all the volatility in the market. We weren't quite sure, you know, where we would land. We knew going in on the day of pricing that the 10-year and in the short bond market was pretty strong. The long market, was kind of iffy, and true form, you know, the early stuff, the first 10 years sold out pretty quickly, and we were oversubscribed in that, and the longer stuff after 2041 just kind of sat there and didn't get a lot of interest. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I think, City and RBC did a great job of reaching out, and I think the district's, you know, great credit rating, I think our strong reputation, we do have a very strong following for institutional investors. I think they carried the day, and at the end of the day, all of the bonds were purchased by third parties, and we just couldn't have hoped for a better bond sale.
Congratulations.
Yes, Ms. Downer here. I wasn't expecting you that
quickly. Okay. No, it was, you know, it was funny. The last time I was here, we talked about the 2021 bond sale. BlackRock came in and bought all of it, you know, like about a half an hour in, and I had never seen that before. And conversely, this time, you know, it's kind of a buyer's market, and so, you know, the investors are more selective. But sometimes I think there's some extra phone calls that are made, behind the scenes, and people step up and say, yeah, this is, the district's a good investment. We want to own their long bonds.
And when the market's in the tank, don't they usually go to munis?
Yeah, munis and treasuries, the flight to quality.
Commissioners, any questions?
No, it's just very, very interesting to me. My late husband was in that kind of business, and he knew a whole lot about it. And so I just kind of, you know, left it to him, but now I'm getting up to speed much more. Thank you.
Commissioner Bell?
No, thank you.
I have a question.
All right. And if we could, I need to cover one more thing, and it's purely an administrative thing. There is no action required by the board.
Oh, that's
But our resolution 5853 which governs our electric system reserve policy, allows the commission to set categories of bond reserves. So like contingency reserve, operating reserve, sinking fund reserves. Those categories are controlled by resolution by the board. It's delegated authority to the CEO, general manager, to set up individual funds within those categories. And so the delegation includes that the commission be notified at the next meeting of any individual funds that have been set up. And so I just want to communicate that within the project reserve, we have set up the 2022 bond construction fund. So the proceeds of the bond sale will go into this fund and will be used to pay for capital projects. We also, in the sinking reserve category, we set up the 2022 bond interest and bond principal funds, and those monies will be set aside to pay the principal and interest when they come due. And then we also set up a bond, in the bond debt service reserve fund, we set up the 2022 bond reserve, and that's earmarked for investors in the event that we ever have financial difficulty down the road. It's kind of our pledge to the investors that we keep some money segregated. So again, no action, just to let you know, the accounting department needs it, the treasury department needs these funds just to segregate them. So you're aware and we've now stayed in compliance with the resolution.
I didn't fully understand the third category. Could you say that one? Would you repeat that one about something for investors?
Well, the bond debt service reserve fund.
Okay,
so in the master resolution for the bonds, for the electric system bonds, we have a pledge to investors that part of the proceeds of any bond issue will be set aside and earmarked for the bondholders in the event that we can't make a principal or interest payment. And the money's invested and it earns interest, and but it's there. We've never had to use the reserve fund, but it's a safety net that investors want to see.
Is that vulnerable, that fund? Because I heard that the state might be interested in, that the state might be trying to, what should I say, get after some of those kinds of funds?
That is kind of a legal question. I can't imagine that the state would have the right to reach through and take those funds. I'm not the expert on it, but like I say, it's a pledge that we've made to the bondholders that's set up by resolution. And to the extent that it's not available for anybody other than the bondholders.
Okay.
So Jim, does it follow if we hadn't made that pledge, we would have got 3.96%, we would have got a worse interest rate?
I can't imagine that anybody would buy them, to be honest. It's
that's pretty
deal breaker.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. And just a couple quick comments. One, a huge thank you to Jim, who leads these processes the Bourne way, Alexis Dickey. I happened to wander down to the third floor and around Jim's office to try to catch the action. And Jim did spend a little time humoring me to see what goes on behind the curtain. And it really is fascinating. And the team just does. I mean, we are so lucky to have the folks that we have working on the bond sale. So just a huge kudos to the entire team.
So do you all sit around with green visors and jump
off? Oddly enough, my grandfather had sleep girders, and something that I wanted when he passed away was his sleep garters, and I do have a green visor, but I rarely wear it.
I've just seen that in the movies.
But it's got to be an exciting day. We don't do that often, so I imagine it was really fascinating.
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of like game day. I mean, you put in so much time and effort and preparation and hard work to get there. And then as you sit, and John was able to come into my office and watch as the orders came in, and you could see who's buying what and what maturities are filling up and which maturities are not filling up, which then causes angst.
Sure.
Yeah. And I had to feel that angst, but I mean, you're in good hands. Yeah. So they just kindly kicked me out of the room and said, go away and we'll handle this. And they did.
And all took care of itself.
Thanks for the W.
Part of your job, feeling angst.
Thanks, June. Okay, next up is Nick Johnston to present on the Everest Camino Site License Agreement Amendment. Morning, Nick.
Morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking the time. Again, I'm Nick Johnston, Manager of Telecommunications Department. And there's already been some great presentations this morning. Unfortunately, this is kind of a boring one with the lease agreement. I promise you, telecom does a lot more interesting things, but today we're just going to stick to the lease. Similar to last time we talked, this one is for the Camino site owned by Everest. And there we go. So again, today we're going to talk about a new amendment for our license agreement with Everest, their Camino site. It's specifically to add an AMI antenna to it, just like we talked about last time with the Crown Castle site. Today we're going to go over the information on the existing lease and kind of what we're adding to it. And, in the next meeting, we'll ask for consideration for approval to sign that. So a little bit of background. Again, the district owns owns and operates two land mobile radio systems that we use the Camino site for. That area has some topology that's difficult to cover, specifically the west-facing slopes of the mainland and Long Beach, and also the west-facing slopes on Camino Island. It's difficult to get over that shoulder. And this site has a specifically tall tower that allows us to get over that hump. So it's a benefit to our network and allows us to reach areas that otherwise we wouldn't be able to reach. The district, like we talked about, is deploying an AMI network, and the amendment is to add an antenna to it. So the original lease was signed in 2009 with Verizon Communications, initial rate of $43,084. It's currently at $63,542. It's a 5-year lease. It has three automatic 5-year renewal terms. So it's typical telecom site that changes ownerships over the years. So as you see the different documents, you're going to see different ownerships. But a summary of that, we initialized the agreement with Verizon in 2008. They owned it through 2009, where they sold the Northwest properties to Frontier Communications. So we dealt with them from 2009 to 2019. And then recently, Everest, that we refer to as our Everest Infrastructure Partner Communications, in 2019, so that's for the existing lease as well. We did have an amendment back in May of 2020 where we were seeing some difficulty with receive levels on our VHF radio system. So it's an 8-foot antenna with a 20-foot and increased the monthly payments to $125. So we have a second amendment, and that, like I mentioned, is to add a 10-foot omni antenna for our AMI network. I anticipate this is going to cover approximately 32,675 electric meters, 1,000 water meters in the Warm Beach area, and then also we have approximately 13 DA devices planned that will be seen by this.
DA, distribution
automation. This will increase the monthly rate by $225 per month. Overall, pretty good for what we're
doing. What was the term of this one?
It's just going to add to our existing one. I think we're in the second 5-year term.
Okay.
So like I mentioned, the next step is the next meeting. We'll ask for your consideration to approve the resolution so we can sign that. Any questions?
Commissioner Wolf, questions? No, not this
term. Right.
Commissioner Lofton?
No.
Straightforward presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Nick. Next up is Maureen Barnes on the City of Arlington North County Binding Site Plan and Easement Dedication.
Commissioners, I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation. My wife is on the Arlington City Council.
Thank you. I'm Maureen Barnes, Manager of Real Estate Services, and this is regarding the dedication of easements for our North County campus. Purpose of the presentation is to inform all of you the upcoming request for the surplus property interest on a portion of the district property and allow us to go ahead and execute the easements and the transfer of the utilities, which is water and sewer, to the city of Arlington. We'd also like to be able to answer any questions regarding the process of dedication for the final binding site plan of the district's North County campus. And staff recommendation is for the board to approve to move forward, schedule a public hearing August 2nd, and vote via a resolution. So a little bit on the background of the North County campus. It was originally purchased in 2012, consists of approximately 26 acres. The site will include the following: the Arlington Microgrid, Community Solar, Clean Energy Center, Modular Data Center, North County Community Office, District Training Facilities, Crosswind Substation. So back in November of 2020, we came to you regarding the dedication of the 6-foot road that is was turned over to the city and the granting of those utilities that were in at the time for water and sewer. As the construction has progressed, additional utilities and some frontage improvements have been constructed, which require dedication to the city of Arlington. I know later this afternoon there's going to be a presentation for the actual building of the office area. This will allow for the continued permitting and for construction to continue. If you look here, the crosshatch, this is the binding site plan, the revised one. The crosshatched are the utilities that we dedicated in 2020. And then the new utilities are those that are in red that we will be asking to declare surplus and then also to dedicate over to the city of Arlington. Here is just showing some of the improvements that we've done. As you can see, the utilities, fire, that went in. So what is the dedication and execution of the easements? Real Estate Services and Facilities are requesting that Commission hold a public hearing on August 2nd at the Commission meeting. Declare the property interests surplus, not the property, but just the interests surplus to the district for the current and future needs, and allow us to go ahead and sign the easements and transfer the utilities to the city of Arlington. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. And Doug Wilson is here also, so anything that I can't, hopefully he can.
How do you value property interests?
Well, these we aren't actually valuing. In order for us to continue construction, we have to dedicate those over to the city.
Okay.
But no monetary.
Okay. Thank you. I have no question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Maureen. Next up is Adam Cornelius to present on the Qualcomm Senior Program Agreement. Good morning, Adam.
Morning.
Morning, John. Morning, Commissioners. My name is Adam Cornelius, and I'm a Principal Utility Analyst in the Power Supply Department. And we've come to you previously on this, not December 7th, 2022. We're not referencing a future meeting here, but that one should have been 2021. So
that's okay. We'll figure it out.
I'm here today to discuss a proposed new clean fuels program agreement related to the Qualco project. Go ahead and move to the next slide, please. New to in-person meeting. at the highest level, the purpose of this presentation is to brief you on our proposal that the Qualco project participate in a clean fuels program that will reduce the effective cost of that project for our customers. We're briefing you today in anticipation of a request for board action on August 16th. And we propose to also have an executive session to walk through the contract details, which contain some intellectual property that make it somewhat unique. And so today, we'll walk through some of the background on Qualco and some updates on the installation progress. I'll talk to you a little bit about the Oregon Clean Fuels Program and how Qualco fits into that. And then some high level information about the proposed agreements. So Qualco, back in 2008, began operating their biodigester and a 450 kilowatt generator. At the time, they were, Sun Energy was purchasing power from them. And then in 2014, the PUD began purchasing power. We had an initial five-year agreement that gave us electricity and the renewable energy credits generated by the project. And then we've had a series of one-year PPA extensions under that same pricing. We worked towards a new agreement and arrangement there, which we signed in May 2021. That's a new lease and operating agreement where the PUD would purchase and operate a new, larger 675 kilowatt generator. Under the new agreement, we still retain ownership of the electricity in RECs. It's a seven-year term that goes through May 30th, 2028, with some optional extensions. And the prior PPA will terminate when the new generator has its commercial operation date. So I also wanted to give a quick status update on the new project. This is from the generation department. Try to answer questions here, but I'm probably not the best person. So we're getting close, is my understanding. The generation crews are finalizing their installation of electrical and mechanical systems. They've installed the generator and the main feeders to that generator. And then the fiber run to the powerhouse, which is needed for our system protection, is complete. And that was one of the things that was playing the project a little bit with getting the easements for that fiber. So it's good to have that milestone complete. It looks like they will begin commissioning the generator in mid-August, target of mid-September for commercial operations. And then one other update, Qualco has replaced their old generator with a biogas boiler. So this will take the when our generator is down for maintenance, the digester still needs heat to continue to producing the biogas. And so it can take the biogas, produce the heat, and then send that heat back into the digester. Normally that heat is provided by heat from the generator. So it's a good backup system, and it's a simpler to keep up than our prior plan, which was to use the old generator. Generators kind of reaches end of life more or less. So turn to kind of the heart of the presentation. I wanted to provide an overview of the environmental program we are proposing that Qualco participate in, which is Oregon State's Clean Fuels Program. So the goal of this program and others like it is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions associated with transportation fuels. How it works is the state sets a greenhouse gas emission threshold for transportation fuels. Fuels that are cleaner than the threshold get assigned credits that they can sell on a marketplace. Fuels with a higher emissions than the threshold are required to buy those types of credits to clean themselves up to get down to that threshold level. So, think oil and gas, or get oil and diesel fuels for that latter category. Electricity used for electric vehicle charging is covered by the program, and because electricity is, especially in the Northwest, is cleaner than the threshold, buyers of EV charging. Generate credits. But the lower the emissions intensity, the cleaner that underlying electricity is, the more credits get generated. So there's kind of a grid electricity standard, and then renewables like wind and solar have an emissions intensity of zero, so they're much cleaner than the grid. And biodigesters like Qualco actually have a negative emissions intensity. So they're, because they convert methane that would otherwise be released into the atmosphere and is a more potent greenhouse gas, CO2, which is not great, but less potent than methane, the end net result is negative greenhouse gas emissions. So Qualco is sort of uniquely situated to participate in this type of program, as are other biodigesters. And so we can sell the Qualco RECs, renewable energy credits, to electric vehicle charging stations in Oregon to then generate clean fuel program credits. And this clean fuels program, unlike some other environmental programs, which kind of treat all renewables as equal, this really recognizes the full value of Qualco's negative emissions intensity. And so by converting those RECs into clean fuels program credits, we are, our understanding and anticipation is that their value can be about 3 to 5 times higher.
We're impressed that we figured this out.
Well,
seems like cheating.
Yeah, I think you know, a lot of other programs, including Washington State's, you know, Energy Independence Act, which is our renewable portfolio standard, kind of treats all renewable generators as equal, and this kind of has more differentiation. We did get some help in figuring this out. There's a third party, 3Degrees, which is, you know, pretty big company in the kind of renewable energy credits and other environmental attributes space. And they have quite a bit of experience with the clean fuels program, both Oregon's version and California's, which has been around for a lot longer. And so 3Degrees will help us facilitate the conversion of those RECs into clean fuels program credits. We're proposing two agreements. The first is an agreement with 3Degrees that under which the, you know, PV would sell the Qualco RECs that we have title to, and we would provide some data reporting to 3Degrees, whereas 3Degrees would then provide us a share of the revenue from the CFP credits, and they would manage the program compliance obligations with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, which also has a existing business relationship with EV charging companies, so they're facilitating that transaction. We've set up a pricing structure that helps protect the PUD in the event that 3 to 5 times value doesn't materialize. We really think it will, but in case something changes in the pricing structure, where we essentially can maintain the current value of RECs. And the term of this agreement would end at the end of 2026. We're also proposing an agreement with Qualco. We would essentially split the incremental clean fuels program value with Qualco. And in return, they provide a bunch of the needed data on their dairy and digester operations to 3Degrees, which are required for the program. It's a lot more extensive for this type of a program where they're trying to measure the reduced emissions than we have otherwise had in place than it is for other renewable energy similar term and date at the end of the process. So overall, we We believe that the CFP program will reduce the effective cost of the Qualco generation for our customers. The revenue sharing model that we have will incentivize both the PUD and Qualco to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and maximize the CFP program value. And there is flexibility within our agreement with three degrees to switch to a clean fuels program in a different state. Washington is currently developing a similar program, for example, if the opportunity proves to be greater. And so, as I mentioned at the top, we'll plan to come back on the 16th to submit proposed resolutions to the board to approve authorization to enter into the two aforementioned agreements with 3 degrees. Any questions?
I was going to research the origin of the name 3 degrees, but I'm guessing that it's because when they started their business, it was based on the fact that we knew that the planet could not warm more than 3 degrees, or we would be.
I think you're right that that's the origin, I haven't looked it up or asked either. It's a good question. But
that's just what I remember.
That would be
3 degrees is like the maximum we can tolerate as a planet.
Yeah, that would be my intuition as well, but I honestly don't know for sure. They could have some.
I think it's sort of fits with what your work is.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Sure. Is this a fairly small or modest revenue stream? Is this kind of thing enough to incentivize us financially to do more renting kind of capture projects in our territory, or thoughts about that?
It potentially could, yeah. As I mentioned, it's much greater value than the the rack value that we have just by generating any renewable energy. So I think that's something that we can explore as we kind of get into the program and see. It's a meaningful difference in the kind of overall financials for the Qualco project.
I visited a methane plant in Vermont, and it's a place where most of the cities, Burlington and all of the big cities, take their waste, their garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a landfill.
Yeah.
It's huge. And they have pipes in the ground, and they capture the methane from the garbage dump. And they have this, I have pictures in my phone if you want to see it. And it's just exciting. I think they generate enough energy to power about, 17,000 homes. So I wish we could do that. I mean, I've read about people who would like to do that in Sponsor. Do we have a landfill here in Sponsor? You know?
I am not sure, but I don't know any of our.
We used to, but not now.
We used to, yeah.
Yeah.
At the island in the Steamboat Slough, there was a large landfill there. That super fun case, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I wish we could do that again because it's a great source of energy. And I don't know how it would fit with our business here, but we probably couldn't.
Yeah, I think there could be opportunity.
Thank you. I love this whole call. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's fun. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam. Great job. And next up, and actually last on our agenda, is a customer service regulations update. Good morning,
Commissioners. My name is Tim Epp. I'm the Senior Manager of Work and Asset Management, and spend most of my day actually working on Connect Up program. And joining me this morning to co-present is Cindy Nance, who's the Senior Manager of Customer Experience in Customer Service. And while the two of us have a lot of PUD experience, we are experienced enough to know that we don't know everything. So we have also brought others with us if there are questions that stump us.
We drew the short straw.
Yeah. So with that, we'll dive in. There we go. Thank you. So So the purpose of the presentation is to prepare the board for future approval of the customer service regulations. These were last given to the board for updates and approval back in June of 2020. No formal presentation was actually made at that point. It was just on consent agenda for board approval. This time there are more substantial changes that we felt like they walked through was probably not warranted. So I have not included minor edits for formatting, spelling correction, things like that, that will be in the board packet for approval when the resolution does come. It's really the content changes that we intend to focus this way.
So this section is.
All right,
that's okay. You're too far ahead. You're talking to the mic. You're too far. Too far ahead.
There we go.
There we go. Trying to mess me up this morning. So this section, the 2.2, is just regards to verbiage regarding our customers and how we correspond with our customers. The previous verbiage in the customer service regs basically stated how we corresponded with our customers via mail, and we wanted to expand that parameters to how we can correspond them like via texting, such as outage alerts, that type of thing in the future. So it was just changing the verbiage to add that additional language. That's just the one on the language I just talked about. I mean, whenever we correspond with our customers, it just talked about mail. We didn't have the verbiage in there about being able to text or
I think it's later. Oh,
it's later, I think, yeah.
In the next section, we made changes. One, to expand meter to include metering system as we put in the AMI. System, we know that malfunctions in the metering system as a whole could also result in possible estimations for customers. Hopefully rare, but I thought that that change is warranted here in the regulations. And then also in subsection 3.7b, we made some language tune-up to make things more consistent with the RCW and reduce confusion with other parts of the customer service regulations.
Section is on dispute resolution. So our customers have the ability to dispute a charge if they feel like it's not accurate. So the previous language in the customer service regs was very vague. It didn't really detail the process in the dispute resolution. So we wanted to make sure that the customer service regs were consistent with that dispute resolution process.
Do we notify customers there's this process?
Yes, we do. Along with our regs, it's on our website. And then when our customer service representatives, when we're dealing with the customer and we see that it's escalating and maybe kind of just going around in circles, we're not able to resolve it, provide a positive outcome to the customer, then the customer service representatives have the ability to offer them the resolution.
Can we go back to three?
Slide three.
On four that we just covered. I have a couple of questions, just curiosity. So, well, given the smart meters for disconnects down at the bottom, will that customer have a choice of using the ability of the smart meter in terms of choosing their payment type and instruction?
It certainly can call the customer service. Are you referring to prepayment as an option? That's on our roadmap as a future thing to add on top. Once we've got our base system in, we would love to offer a prepayment as an option for our customers.
That's where I was going. Thank you.
All right, there are scenarios when a security deposit may be required, and in section 3.10, the language is being updated to reference the district's decision to discontinue providing interest on deposits. Interest payments were made as a courtesy to customers, but as the district isn't required per the WAC law to provide that,
and stop accruing and paying interest to ensure the careful and equitable use of ratepayer funds. In addition, it's industry standard that interest isn't paid on those types of deposits.
I guess I missed something. What is the deposit for?
So a few different things. Sometimes we'll charge a security deposit if the customer had an incomplete application at new service. Mm-hmm. We also require a credit score of 700 or above. If a customer is applying for new service and they have poor credit, we'll charge a deposit. In other scenarios, we charge it if there's been tampering meter, then we'll institute a security deposit at that time.
Okay, thank you.
Again. So this verbiage, as you can see in July of 2020, that the deduction amounts for the discounts were changed. But the language was kept in the customer service regs at the time because there were some customers that were still grandfathered into that 60%. So all we're doing today is removing that verbiage because as of March 31st of 2021, all the customers that have been grandfathered into that 60% are all now at 50%. So this is just our first opportunity to come before you and remove that language from the regs.
All right, the next major change to the customer service regulations is the addition of the opt-out parameters guiding the AMI Connect Up program. So this falls under non-standard service. This is section 5, a new section, subsection 5.2. This is content that was shared with the board in April of last year. We've spent the time since that discussion ensuring that our system could actually handle the parameters that we shared and we discussed with you all, and the system can do that. So we have come back with no changes to what was shared last time. This is exactly the same parameters that we presented to you before. Pause for questions or concerns.
This really doesn't have anything. Well, okay, I'll say it's under the regs, so I don't give it. if you want to elect to do self-read.
Yes.
And is there a dispute resolution linked to this?
Everything is subject to dispute resolution.
Okay.
That falls within the customer service regulation. So customers do have that opportunity if there was something they felt was misapplied to them, they could appeal.
All right, thank you. So on 5.2.C, self-read,
yes.
Meter reading. So is that done with a photograph?
Yes, I believe that is the case. The customer takes a picture of their meter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can.
Take a picture and forward it?
Yeah, they can email it to us. Yeah, and we have a portal on our website that they can just upload that picture.
Interesting. And so if somebody is doing self-read and doing self-reporting, and let's say they go somewhere for 3 months, can they switch over to being billed, say, 3 months, $75, and then go back? Because they certainly wouldn't be able to read it if they were in Europe or somewhere.
Correct. I don't know for sure. I would think so, but Tim, have you?
That is a scenario that we had not thought through. Great question. And we will put some brain time on that. And I think if they... Speaking off the cuff here, I would certainly say if they let us know ahead of time,
sure.
We would not
if
penalize customers.
For 3 months, they would know.
Yeah, we wouldn't penalize customers, I believe, in that situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Quite a positive customer experience whenever we can. So.
Okay, thank you.
I think this looks great. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. A lot of hard work, but
yeah, I think this is strikes a nice balance.
Thank you.
Right. So the sections 7 is regards to fees and charges, and I'm just going to speak to the 7.3, 7.4, and 7.5. These were fees were updated in a to our fee structure for disconnection of or reconnection of service when someone's been to that suspended for non-payment. And it's really a result of feedback from our customers and our employees in regards to the type of situation that customers are already in when they to get their power shut off. We wanted to minimize that impact when they're already struggling. And so we wanted to remove the fee for the disconnection and only just raise the fee for the reconnection slightly. And that still covers the amount that we need to roll the truck.
Yes.
Okay. So will we revisit this when everyone has the advanced meter, so we don't have to roll the truck?
So we did make some language specific changes in here to note that it is a field disconnection or
right.
field
oh.
reconnection. So this would apply to opt-out customers in the future, not automated disconnect.
Okay. Makes sense.
Okay. Well,
are we going to get to the bottom of the page?
Oh, geez, please.
Oh,
more questions. So we do have the opt-out fees that were shared last year are what are presented here again. So for opt-out read, it'll be a base $25 for to roll a truck and have customer and read one meter. Customer has more meters on their premise, say a barn or a shop that's separately metered, that would be an additional $5 per read. Otherwise, if customer is elected to opt out, it'll be just be a $5 charge. So it's no charge as well.
Okay. What was the date that the board was briefed on the fees that are here?
That was April 6th. I think I had that in my supplemental
okay.
slide, April 6th of last year.
Okay. Was that, though, not a report of comparisons?
It did include a chart showing what other utilities
yeah,
in the region
and
are
I
charging.
Thought that we had narrowed or zeroed in on what the BUD would do.
Yes, and that's the $25 here.
And we did at that meeting?
There was no challenge to that. So that was intended to recoup the cost of what it actually takes to
roll
right. vehicles.
I couldn't find that, but I, commissioners, I just, I guess I should have done my research a long time ago on this. But when we have gotten those questions, I have heard us kind of say they're coming. So I guess this is their coming.
Well, I think when we say that, it was the details that were coming. But I guess officially it's the fees that are
coming. It's the fees that are coming. And so I guess maybe it was only me that misunderstood that.
I would say your interpretation of this is the coming is correct.
Okay.
This is the presentation for your.
So there is a segment of those we serve that have been questioning, you know, when was this going to come out, and it's kind of buried now. Well, not buried, it's now included in the updated regs, and I doubt those customers would know where to find it. So how are we going to deal with that?
So when 3 months, 90 days prior to meter installation, we will be electric meter installation. We will be sending a letter that does include instructions on where to go learn about our opt-out policy and program on snowpad.com. So each customer will get that instruction, and then on the website, we'll have information about how to opt out, what are the implications of opting out. So those details will be provided.
So when a commissioner gets that question, now we say we have approved it. In the updated customer service regs, they're posted?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Customer service representatives will have all that on hand and all that, you know, to be able to help the customer when they call with all those questions. So they'll have all that information for
yeah,
them as well.
Yeah.
So
if somebody calls on the phone and says, hey, I need to know, when are we going to do opt-out or something like that? You can say that you will get full information 90 days before the
correct.
Install of your new meter.
Correct.
Okay.
but can refer them on to what the board has approved for this action.
I think a lot of future action are just wanting to know, are we going to have it or not? So no, at this point, we can say yes. We will have that option. We really want to do that.
I think the self rate is a great option. $5, that's a, you know, if you really don't want a meter, you know, using the cellular technology, I think that's a, so thank you so much for making that option a possibility.
Absolutely, and we think it's actually one of, that's a very unique aspect of our opt-out program that we don't see out there. So
yeah.
It is special.
Thank you very much.
And in remembering this, Brett, that other utilities, are we kind of in the middle?
We are in the middle, and we're, you know, we're consistent with other utilities are charging application fees. Some of those fees are quite exorbitant, quite high, hundreds of dollars in some cases. We are not charging an application fee. But our monthly fees are probably consistent with the density of our population.
Yeah.
So Seattle charges less, but they're in a compact environment.
Yeah.
We have to travel more. So.
Okay.
So as we go forward and have time under our belts, once we have the smart meters, when we relook at this, whether these fees are the appropriate amounts to cover the cost?
We will, and in our customer, in our opt-out statements online, and also in the application, we'll ask our customers to fill, we will state that this program and the fees will be revisited on a regular basis for appropriate use.
Sure.
Well, that's revisited in the revision to the regs, right?
Yes.
Is that the revision?
Yes, exactly.
Any other questions, commissioners? You two aren't the ones to answer this, but old Tony's going to ask again, when are we going to see the customer service regs update? I mean, the line extension regs updates.
We could make that back if that's something that we want to bring to the board.
We historically have not. I get these mixed up. Line extension regs don't come to us.
That's correct.
Okay, stop. I don't want to start something that would.
No, I'm happy to answer the question just to remind you. The commission has passed several resolutions delegating to the general manager the authority to establish line extension regs. The second one was just to add a little bit more language about making sure that the regulations are designed to cover our costs and not go beyond that. And so we have made regular updates through the general manager.
Yeah.
If you would like to see them, we can provide an informational briefing.
I'm not asking for that. Please, I don't understand that. So.
I would say they're in good shape.
Good, and
they're
because,
well.
You know, I'm only asking because the one time it was 10 years.
Yeah, we are.
You're on top of it, okay.
Yeah, Brian's done a really nice job with those.
Great. No more questions?
All right, and next steps, we'll be back next board meeting for a resolution that will, for board approval to adopt these changes. See you in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You.
Great presentation.
Great job, Jim and Cindy. That is all the presentations that we have for this morning.
August 7th is going to be a home dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, a big meeting.
All right, it is 10:13 a.m. and the meeting is being recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here at 1:30 p.m. Thank you.